My husband works here. You know, like, this is home. This is where we built, you know, everything to stay here forever.
So where does this leave you now, Kylie? I mean, it looks like it's signed, sealed, delivered, that it will end at the end of next year. Do you have to relocate to somewhere like Wyong?
We're hoping it's not signed, sealed, and delivered. We're currently working with Steve McMahon.
Yep.
We have a meeting with him on Thursday. You know, we're pleased with Gosford Race Club and Racing New South Wales to help save training at Gosford and all the jobs that go with it. Like, there's not just directly, like, there's 13 people who work for me.
Mm.
You know, I've got 6 full-time and, you know, 7 part-time sort of thing. And then you've got farriers and dentists and all those sorts of things that, you know, earn quite a bit out of, you know, out of the industry. And so is everybody else. You know, there's lots of, you know, track staff that will lose their jobs too. It's very far-reaching. And, I mean, they say that it's sort of not viable money-wise, but, I mean, I don't think any racing centre is making money out of training.
Mm.
But you've got to have horses trained to race.
Well, I'm going to talk to Steve McMahon first up tomorrow morning. He mentioned he's got a meeting with the trainers on Thursday morning to have a chat with you all then.
Yes.
Well, good luck today. Let's hope you get a winner today.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Kylie.
Bye-bye.
Kylie Gavin-Lock there, and she's got Invincible George in today. And, yeah, another side of the view. Now, Andrew Giorgio joins from tab.com.au. Andrew, you got some jackpots for us.
Yeah, that's right, Sean. Good morning to you, and good morning to all the listeners. 3 jackpots on this week for New South Wales TAB customers. It all gets underway on Thursday at Dapto, where the Quaddie has a $20,000 jackpot to get things underway there. That's on races 5 to 8. Then we look forward to Saturday at Royal Randwick. The Big Six has $50,000 in the pool to get things underway. Of course, that's being held on the last 6 races on the card. And later on that night, the harness fans haven't been forgotten about. Tabcorp Park Menangle, first 4 on every race on the program, there's a $2,500 jackpot. So plenty going on, and there's definitely more reasons than one to have a crack at the exotics this weekend.
Terrific. Good on you, Andrew. We'll talk to you through the day.
Thanks, Cozzy.
Andrew Giorgio there, tab.com.au. It's 10:02 at Sky Sports Radio.
You played really well out there. You must be pleased with that.
Yeah, I've been seeing him well for a while now, so to rack up a good score feels great.
This summer, TAB is your home of cricket. Place a high bat bet on any test, one-day international, T20 or big bash game over the Australian home summer, and you'll score an uncapped 25% bonus on your winnings. Get on at your local TAB, tab.com.au, or download the app.
T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly.
The Big Sports Breakfast's going to Mudgee for the Cup. If you're going to, be sure to drop into the home of Mudgee Racing, the Oriental Hotel. The Oriental is one of Mudgee's most iconic and best-loved pubs, renowned for its fabulous food and welcoming atmosphere. Make the Oriental Hotel your destination for pre- and post-race celebrations. On Cup E Thursday, catch up with all your racing friends and catch the Ori courtesy bus to and from the races on Cup Day. The Oriental Hotel, your Mudgee Cup headquarters. Visit orientalhotel.com.au.
This summer, Queensland will be turning on the blue skies, the golden sands, and the black type. Because with over 20 listed group races on offer, owners and trainers can pick up a lot more than a tan when they compete at the 2015-16 Queensland Racing Carnival. There's also the opportunity to qualify your horse for one of 4 $1 million Magic Millions races. For summer racing carnival details, visit racingqueensland.com.au.
Starter has the button, stalls are back and racing. Feel sent on their way to the roar of the crowd.
Set. They're off.
On your racing and sports leader, Sky Sports Radio, it's time for TAB Talk. With the very latest in racing and sport from around the country, welcome to TAB Talk.
10:05 with Sean Cosgrove and Jared Middleton, tab.com.au. Morning, Jared, how are you?
Yeah, really well, Cozzy. How are you?
Fighting fit, thank you. What a round of golf. What a weekend of golf it was. We've got Mark Hayes from Golf Australia joining us now. Morning, Hazy. How are you, mate?
G'day, Cozzy. Yeah, just catching up a little bit on some sleep after an unbelievable week out of the Australian.
That was incredible, the Australian Open. I mean, if you tried to choreograph the last couple of rounds, you couldn't have done a better job.
Yeah, no, it was extraordinary. And you know, everyone basically thought on Saturday night that it might be a shootout in two between Matt Jones and Jordan Spieth, the world number one. And as it turned out, those were the only two who realistically could win it on the last green, but that would discount all the drama that happened in the 4 hours and the intervening 4 hours, because we just didn't expect to see any drama like that right from an unbelievable 61 from Rod Tampley right through to the last green. There were four or five blokes who could have won, and just a steady hand on that James, probably the last four or five holes, really got the job done.
Rod Pampling's been around a long time, and I mean, all of a sudden that's 61. That was just unbelievable.
It was extraordinary. He actually read a really excellent story in the Daily Telegraph in Sydney on Monday. He was that adamant and certain that his championship chances were finished, that he actually went out on Saturday night, didn't damage himself in any sense, but he actually had quite a few Bundy rums with an old mate of his who was in town to catch up. So they said in the paper he was fueled by Bundy rum and had no cares in the world. No, I don't know quite that far, but he actually bogeyed the first hole. And we all remember the mighty 63 that Spieth hit in, and admittedly that was in high winds and under great pressure the year before on the corresponding day. But to go out after shooting a bogey on the first hole and peel off 9 birdies and an eagle on the last for the 70-foot putt on the last, I mean, he was hoping to two-putt and he rolled it in for a 61. It's almost defies belief because it is one of the hardest championship courses in Australia.
I reckon after the Bundys, those cups must have looked like basketball hoops.
We might have been looking at two of them. That must
have been. I'll just go for the one in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Didn't he?
It was an unbelievable day. And then, to see Adam Scott charge through, he played spectacular golf. That was fantastic to see him putt so well. And he could easily have the tournament gone on another two holes. He might be the one we're talking about right now.
Yeah, Hazy, didn't Matt Jones show some nerve, though, particularly with that bunker chip-in at the 12th?
That was unbelievable, Jerry. I mean, I was talking to Caddy Shannon Wallace afterwards. An awesome story about it, actually, on golf.org.au. Wallace said that he drove it up the right into the trees off the tee, and then he second, caught a branch and actually went backwards, and he said his head came off, which is, one of those classic golf terms. He was just about cooked then, dumped it into the front bunker, trying to be a bit cute with his third, and for all intents and purposes, right there, Matt Jones was gone. So when he chipped it in, he said he got a whole new lease of life, basically walking to the 13th tee, just dodged, not a bullet, he dodged it. I don't know, heap of cannonballs maybe, because it was just a spectacular shot at just the right time. So it's hard to sort of put that in words, how that must have made him feel, because I'm sure he thought that the Stonehaven Cup had slipped through his fingers.
And this is a significant win for his career, winning the Stonehaven Cup. He looks very capable of winning a major even now. He's been pretty consistent on the PGA Tour the last year or two.
He has, without doing anything spectacular. Of course, we saw him have his first win on the US PGA Tour on the eve of the 2014 Masters when he chipped in the playoff at the Shell Houston Open. That was an extraordinary shot, in itself. Showed that he can do it under the pump, but he really has been knocking on the door without being spectacular. I had a really good chat to him on the wing balance before he started this last week of his, and he just said, "Mate, I've got to the position where as long as I carry the cards secure, I can now pick and choose the schedule," which is sort of what we've seen Jason Day and Adam Scott do in the last few years after the feeling more comfortable and locked in on the PGA Tour, that they can actually start playing when and where they want to. And he said, if I could play rested, I reckon I'm going to go much better. And then his coach, after the fact on Sunday night, basically said he expects him to win a major sometime in the next 5 years. And, that says it all. I mean, I know he's bound almost to say that in his camp, but he really feels that Jones has got the game to do it. And we all sort of forget, because Jason Day went on and surged through the field and won the PGA, US PGA Championship at Whistling Straits, but Matt Jones actually led at the halfway mark there. He's just got to figure out that he's got the game to contend at that level. I mean, who knows? He might have done that on Sunday.
Yeah, and Jordan Spieth just showed his class once again, didn't he? Could have won, really, with that eagle putt on the last. I mean, how crucial is it to get the likes of Spieth out here, and how difficult is it?
It's extremely difficult. It's an extremely busy time of the year, and with the American players who invariably populate the top 10 in the world, we're also at our spot in the golfing calendar and the global calendar. We're not only competing against tournaments such as the Dubai World Championship on the European Tour, but we're competing with Thanksgiving and the States as well. It makes it really hard to lock in some of the big name players.
Jordan Spieth, I could not say enough about him in the positive light. He's been an ambassador for the tournament, you know, an unpaid ambassador, and just telling people how good the tournament is and spruiking it all around the world and saying it kickstarted his run this year. So he said after the event that he didn't play his best golf either alongside his good mate Matt Jones, but he still said he'd love to come back next year and ongoing in the future. So when obviously there's some commercial considerations that go along with that, but for him to actually come off the course and say that straight away was fantastic. We don't know if he's going to be at Royal Sydney next year, but we certainly hope so. And he's made it very clear that he wants to come back in the future. Whether it's 2016, time will tell. Let's keep our fingers crossed. If we could manage to have something like Scott, Day, Spieth and one other, that's actually a legitimate world-class tournament matches would rival anywhere in the world.
Now, Hazy, we've got the PGA kicking off in about 2 days' time. And there's, what, a $1 million prize for a hole-in-one on the 16th, is there?
Yeah, I think there is, because I'm not actually up there this week, but that's definitely the go. It's going to bring a whole new light, and that's the bigger prize than what the tournament offers for the winner. It's the richest tournament in Australia. I think it's $1.75 million, but the winner doesn't get anything near like that. So if you can roll in or knock in a shot on the 16th, which is going to be tricky on the Graham Marsh redesign. That'll probably keep the bank manager happy for a few weeks, I'd imagine.
Oh, too right. And wouldn't you find some trouble with that, with $1 million? And it's the 16th on Sunday. Take you a fair way on a bus, Hazy. I'll give you the tip now.
I like that one, yes.
Especially at Royal Pines, the Gold Coast, too.
175 metres, par 3.
There you go.
Also, the course has actually been redesigned by Marsh, so it's going to be a Graham Marsh. So it's going to be an interesting way to learn a bit about his design philosophies. And he's been doing 9 hours a time. There's been a massive redevelopment there at Royal Pines over the last few years. So, you know, we hope that this is a sign that the interest that this tournament generates is a sign for this championship as well.
And we're just open on the market too, Hazy, at tab.com.au. John Sandon, an $11 favourite. Brand Snediger, who's coming out for it at 13. Brett Rumford at 15. David Lingmerth and Peter Ulin at 17. Cam Smith, 20-1. Who do you see as the main contenders here?
Sandon's been extremely consistent the past 2 weeks, and no one knows Queensland courses better. He spends a lot of time at home still. Obviously, we all know he plays on the US PGA Tour, but he, unlike a lot of others, comes home regularly and plays just about to his home club at Capera, not far from Brisbane there. And Sandon is at home in Queensland conditions, knows, he's familiar with the course there, and not the redesigned holes perhaps, but the setting there is not something that's going to shock him. And I think he's justifiably the top pick there. We would love to see Brant Snediger win and everything that comes with defending champions, etc., but it's going to be hard to beat Sandon. He's been there about the past 2 weeks at Huntingdale and the Australian, and wouldn't surprise me to see him at the top again.
Hazy, just for people wondering, when you say, like, Graham Marsh goes in, they redesign a golf course, is it when you look at a hole and they assess a hole, do they totally redesign the whole thing, or it's simply just movement of bunkers and addition of water? Or what do they do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually, because and you're prone to asking the best. I've struggled to keep up with some of these sometimes, to be honest with you. Sometimes some of these holes are completely redesigned. Some of them are lengthened. Some of them have had just shaves on the bunk on the bunkering edges. Some on the green. I think more realistically to play championship golf, the courses have to reflect the length of the hitters. So when Graham Marsh and other designers come in, they take into account some of the courses that were designed for when balls flew a lot shorter. So they basically move the trouble to where the most relevant position is now for today's pros. And the tees will reflect that. That's the big difference between playing Royal Pines this week for the pros and what we can all do, because everyone can go up and play Royal Pines on the Gold Coast. Normally you'd play off the front markers and the bunkers would be in trouble for the people who hit it normal human length as opposed to the pros.
So basically it's like they said now they've amended where the traps are because of the length of the hitters. To a degree.
The best example of that, Cozzy, is actually Augusta National that we all know. The hole that has the most scope for them to have changed over the years is the 11th, and they've moved it back over 80 metres over the past two generations, perhaps. They've got a gap up in the trees, and they just sort of keep building and building and building, and the, you know, that's not possible on a lot of holes on courses all around the world. But for example, the championship we just played at the Australian, it was a T32, 34, I think, something metres back on the 16th from where it was played the previous year. And that's been there for a while, but it's been developed to lengthen the course. It had the capacity to lengthen the course to championship standards. Mm. You just can't believe where some of these guys hit the ball. Lincoln Tye, who was so prominent this past week at the Australian, a young guy from Wollongong, he flies the ball. He lands, he stands on the tee, and he looks at bunkers. He says, they've got to be 310 for him to consider not going over the top of that. So he carries the ball 310 metres. When Royal Pines was first designed, that might have been a sort of mid-length par four, you know. That's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. He's looking at the 10th hole of the Australian Golf Club, which is 360-plus metres, and considering it a drivable option. The ball technology has just got to the point where courses, some old courses without the capacity for redesign, are incapable now of holding championship events because the players have just outsized them.
Only time I've ever carried a ball 310 was in a buggy.
It's frightening, isn't it?
It is. Now, who'll win the PGA? Who can we get on our money on, Hazy?
As I said, I think Sendo's the justifiable favourite that Jared was talking about there, but I wouldn't surprise another one. I think the Queenslanders have a big advantage. We see a different green coverage, different grains and grasses and stuff that they're used to much more than the people who've come up from the south. I wouldn't surprise Cam Smith, probably set up there. He hasn't really done a hell of a lot in Australian tournaments. He's done a lot more overseas. He just hasn't spent the time here. He's done a lot in amateur championships, but we've all seen how his meteoric rise through the ranks to get to the US Tour this year. He too played some really good golf on Sunday, went unnoticed, under the radar a bit, if you like, by Pantling 61, but he surged through the field, just found that little tweak of form, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him go really well. And likewise, I'm not 100% sure he's in the field, Jared, you might check for me, but Oliver Goss is someone who has had his ups and downs through the year on the web.com tour. And I was watching him on the weekend, and I saw a little sparkle in his eye. And I'm not sure if you can check if he's in the field for me, but if he is, I would suggest to your outside punters that he's one worth having a couple of shekels on.
Yeah, he's here 100-1. So well, 100-1, Cam Smith 20-1 there.
Well, Oliver Goss is way, way over at 100-1. If he plays like he did on the weekend, that's just crazy market there. So if you're always looking for my outside tip, there's the one.
Something for the punters, mate.
Beautiful.
Yeah, Cozzy.
Good on you, Hazy. Good to catch up, mate, and we'll talk to you as the tournament progresses.
Pleasure, boys. No worries.
Thanks, Hazy.
Mark Hayes joining us there, Golf Australia. 19 past 10 at Sky Sports Radio. Matty Russell joining us now from Fox Sports. And he'll be looking at the NBL as well as the NRL these days. He's ambidextrous. How are you, Matt?
G'day, Sean. G'day, Jared. Yeah, those two worlds collided last Friday night when I went to the Cairns NBL game. And who should be there throwing three-pointers? None other than Jonathan Thurston. He can do everything. Every award there was in rugby league. And there he was in the three-point line, draining them at a half-time promotion by the Cairns Taipans. What about that?
Is there nothing this man can't do?
And now he's going into bat for his fellow players because a number of the senior players, headed by the biggest name of all, JT, are angry about this new draw and the number of five-day turnarounds for teams. 31, which is on par with last season, but the Players Association, led by Clint Newton at this stage, says they were under the understanding that those games would be, or those turnarounds would be, significantly reduced. They've been maintained, and the Players Association, soon to be headed by Ian Prendergast, a good get from the AFL Players Association, he was second in charge there, expect an announcement this week. They're growing more and more, the Players Association. If they're not happy, then there's a real headache for NRL power brokers down the track.
Matt, there's plenty to talk about. Firstly, today in Sydney's Daily Telegraph, the last four pages of the paper, the back four pages, are all rugby league news only, and it's December 1, which says something to me. It's cricket season, for goodness sake. So, obviously, the big story, though, is Robbie Farah, Matt, asking for a release a week ago, but Dean Ritchie's reporting that he's staying. They've also signed Matt Ballin. Now, how on earth is this situation tenable?
Exactly. That might smooth over the cracks for a few weeks with Robbie Farah's future locked away for a couple more years. But really, how can a senior player, Robbie Farah, and Jason Taylor as the coach, continue to perform in the same setup. Then you've got Matt Ballon, who went there under the assumption Robbie Farah wouldn't be there. What does it mean for Matt Ballon? Who's going to be captain next year at the Tigers? And how will the club be looked at by its own supporters and the outside rugby league world for this absolute fiasco? Saying that he, telling him to look elsewhere, saying we don't have a future for you here. Then when he asks for a release, knocking him back. And now going back to where it all started and saying, well, you've got 2 years to run on your contract. You know what? We'll have you for then. It's farcical. It's laughable. I don't know how this situation, this story is going to finish because, yes, there might be headlines today saying, oh, Robbie's future's locked away. Well, don't for a minute think that the story is locked away here. I think there's a few twists and turns to come yet.
And what about the coach, Jason Taylor? Where does it leave him? I mean, it's just unbelievable, Matt.
It is. And, you know, I fear for the Tigers next season because they've said goodbye to some big names, headlined by Marty Tapau. They've had this off-season tumult. It's going to take all Jason Taylor's superpowers. He was a fantastic player on the field, but he's got to be a fantastic coach and quickly. Otherwise, there'll be some vultures circling above Leichhardt Oval.
Can you see many changes like that happening before we kick off next year? Are there many other disenchanted people floating around?
There's a list on the foxsports.com website that lists the players who are still looking for a future next year. There's not a lot of them. We are more and more settled. I can see some changes to the teams next year who may be prominent and others who might slide. With the draw coming out, there are any number of talking points. And Jared's right. There is so much news in rugby league at the moment, triggered largely by the television deal, which then allowed the draw to be released, which then sent us into all these other story areas. And one of the big areas is the draw discussion. Teams like the Raiders have fared superbly out of the draw. They play a lot of Saturday and Sunday rugby league. They've avoided the top eight teams largely from last season in comparison with the other teams, I mean. Yet you go to the Dragons, who have a host of Thursday and Monday night games. They play the top eight teams 14 times. They start against Melbourne, Cronulla and South Sydney. So, Jared, I'm interested to know what it's done to the betting market for next year. I bet you the Dragons are on the slide and the Raiders would have come in a bit.
You're exactly right. They were the two movers as far as the draw being released is concerned, Matty. Our bookies reacted by just trimming up the Raiders from $26 into $21 in premiership betting, and the Dragons went out from $26 out to $34. So you're exactly right there. The Dragons pretty friendless, I've got to say. In fact, the Dragons have been backed in the most losses market as well, where they're still at double-figure odds at the $11. Of course, they were the surprise packet, let's face it, of season 2015. So, yeah, our bookies certainly reacted to the draw there, Matty. Now, this is a debate I think I've been having it with you for about 5 years, and that is Golden Point, and that's been a big issue at the moment with the commission meeting with the coaches, etc. Now, they're talking about extra time in finals without Golden Point. How do you see that? This is, of course, in reaction to what happened in the grand final.
Just refresh my memory, Jared. Did I win all those debates? I think I did.
No, I cannot cop the shootout, particularly in a grand final. I mean, I love the result, but I think Wayne Bennett's got a point. I think you've got to have golden try in a premiership-deciding situation. I can cop it throughout the regular season, but I don't want to see a premiership decided like that. I'm sorry.
It was hailed as one of the greatest grand finals. Some people were saying it was the greatest grand final.
No, 89 was still better.
89 or 96. Yeah. So let's not debate that. But yeah. I think we're in agreement that it was a great grand final, right?
For sure.
It was a fantastic grand final. Then why do we need to change it?
Oh, because it's not the way. This is what I love. This is what I love. Like, people not rugby for the fact that, you know, it's penalty goals and, you know, it's from a kick that games are decided. Well, a kick decided a rugby league grand final just there. So, you know, in 89 we had a Steve Jackson try. In 97 we had a Darren Albert try. It's just, and just the way that the game's refereed too, particularly in that extra period, which is another thing that I know has been in consideration and has been reported in the papers as in regard to where the coach is meeting with the commission at the moment over the way that the game is refereed in the extra period, where players, let's face it, get away with murder, Matt. How many times have you called a game this year where you saw a player about 5 metres offside trying to charge down a field goal in extra time?
And I saw Todd Greenberg saying that the referees will be told to treat Golden Point as they would the first minute of the game. It's easy to say that. It's much harder to do. Look, I am a fan of Golden Point. I've long said I don't mind Golden Point because I've had a bunch of 10-year-olds jumping around my lounge room going crazy during Golden Point rather than being out on their BMX bikes like they would be if we stopped at 80 minutes. And I go back to the grand final and Wayne Bennett's renewed calls to scrap Golden Point. Well, maybe if Brisbane didn't play such negative football in the last 10 minutes, they wouldn't have gone to Golden Point.
Can't there's you another, put the boot
there's
in?
There's another prod to those of Golden Point. Look, I am willing to cop playing extra time and saying, we won't have Golden Point, we'll have Golden Try. Mm-hmm. But then how do you have a team, they might miss out on the finals by losing a Golden Point game. So how can we have extra time during the finals by basically saying, well, these games mean something, they mean more, so we're going to change the rules here. Surely a game in round 10 or 15 that could decide whether you play finals footy should be as important as the game that is in week 2 or 3 of the finals, because the result in week 15 or 20 can decide whether you make the finals. So maybe if we're going to have a different system for the finals, we need to have a different system during the regular season as well. Oh. I'm all for discussing alternatives to Golden Point. I just hope we don't get back to the stage where we hit 80 minutes and send fans home at 18 all. Because further to that is, by scrapping Golden Point, don't we just make Golden Point the last 10 minutes of regulation time? Don't they just have a field goal shootout for the last 6 or 7 minutes? People say, I hate that. Well, if it happens in the 75th minute, it's all right. But if it happens in the 83rd or 84th minute, oh, this is just a drop goal shootout. So, as you can tell, I've got a few arguments that are in favour of it, and Jared, I think I've won that debate again.
Oh, really? That really used to happen before Golden Point. You'd have a shootout in the last 10 minutes. Come off it. Anyway, yeah. Matty.
Hey, well, Matty.
Now, Cozzy, yeah. Can I just say something? I know you're a proud Queenslander, a mad Queenslander, some would say. Well, there's a bloke in North Queensland called Wayne Mad Dog Evans, who has the tattoo to beat all tattoos. Again, I'll send you to the foxsports.com.au
What is it?
Wayne Mad Dog Evans has the premiership trophy, the Cowboys emblem, and the name of all 17 plus the coach Paul Green emblazoned from the bottom of his neck to the top of his thigh. It is all over his back, celebrating the Cowboys' first premiership. I challenge you, Cozzy, to go and beat that.
Ooh, mate, thank you. That's just a lovely thought, isn't it, eh? If I did that when I took the shirt off, mice would jump on traps. I'll tell you now, it wouldn't
there
be a good look.
There are mad fans, and there are mad fans, and Wayne Evans is suitably nicknamed Mad Dog.
Now, I've got to ask you, did you see the other night the NBL where Marcus Thornton got baptised? I've never seen a basketball player get baptised at a game before. Man poured beer over his head.
Yeah, in beautiful Wollongong. Normally we're above that, but a gentleman who was sitting in the Fig Tree Private Hospital corporate box decided to do that. Maybe he should be in hospital. He was ejected from the venue. He won't be seen at a Hawks game again this season. Some would argue that is a light punishment.
Yeah.
But, yes, I saw that. I almost choked on my beer as I was drinking it. And he won't be back this year, that gentleman, and we read that there might be some other difficulties for him that led to that sort of action, but the Fig Tree Private Hospital corporate box has apologised unreservedly and said it won't happen again. The NBL and the club have apologised to Marcus Thornton, but poor old Sydney Kings, they've lost their coach, Damien Cotter, the first sack of the season, replaced by Washington Wizards assistant Joe Connolly. He needs to be a wizard when it comes to coaching because the Kings are 3-9. Bottom of the table, a crisis club. They're about to play their last game at the Sydney Entertainment Centre, or Qantas Arena, as it's called now, I think. So there's plenty of work to be done for the Kings. Marcus Thornton, he might need to have a beer rather than having a port on.
Good on you, mate. Good to catch up with you, Matty. We'll talk to you soon.
No worries. Brian Conklin also sacked from the Crocs, so there's some other big news. It's been a busy week for the NBL and NRL.
Too right. You're going to need to have a beer now.
All the best, boys.
Thanks a lot, mate. Good on you, Matty. Matty Russell joining us there from Fox Sports. Jared, good to catch up, and we will talk to you through the day.
Absolutely, Cozzy. Thanks very much.
JaredMiddletonTab.com.au, 10:30 Sky Sports Radio.
What a day it will be this Saturday when the Australian Turf Club hosts Melbourne Cup winning jockey Michelle Payne at Royal Randwick.
Prince of Penzance, it's history at Flemington, Michelle Payne.
Michelle will ride. Plus, she'll meet and greet Sydney race fans with brother Stevie and that Melbourne Cup. Join us as we bring you all the excitement of Michelle Payne Race Day from Royal Randwick. This is your racing leader, Sky Sports Radio.
Gay Waterhouse trained Bentley Biscuit to be a high-quality racehorse, winning 12 races, 3 at Group 1 level, earning $1.4 million. Dynamic Syndications and Gay proudly invite you to race Bentley Biscuit's half-brother. Buy Schnitzel, champion sire now with 32 stakes winners, 6 at Group 1 level, and Gay's trained two of his Group 1 winners, Sweet Idea and Wanjina. For $9,475 a share, join our Dynamic Gay Waterhouse team. Visit dynamicsyndications.com or call 1-800-61-9999. AFSL 3360808.
Say hello.
We have your type at the Inglis Classic Yearling Sale. From sprinting greats to derby triumphs, precocious juveniles to stable warhorses. All by a great selection of sires. There is a type of classic yearling for you. Don't miss the first Saturday night session of the Inglis Classic Yearling Sale. 6th to the 8th of February 2016 at Newmarket, Sydney. Catalogue available now at inglis.com.au or download the Inglis Sales iPad app today.
You played really well out there. You must be pleased with that.
Yeah, I've been seeing him well for a while now, so to rack up a good score feels great.
This summer, TAB is your home of cricket. Place a high bat bet on any test, one-day international, T20 or big bash game over the Australian home summer, and you'll score an uncapped 25% bonus on your winnings. Get on at your local TAB, tab.com.au, or download the app.
T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly.
On your racing leader, Sky Sports Radio, it's time for On The Pace.
Sprinter down the outside, finishing brilliantly. Look at Sprinter, he's got the right name.
But he says, ta-da on Bowtide. Some Bowtide brilliance here today. He'll go back-to-back, all right. He's making a mess of them.
Bringing you all the latest harness racing happenings from around New South Wales and across the country.
Now it is 28 to 11. Sharon Adams joins us now, taking a look at On The Pace this week. Morning, Sharon. How are you?
Very well, Cozzy. How are you?
Fighting fit, thank you. You're going to have a big day.
We certainly are. Of course, we have the Inter-Dominion Heats from Bunbury tonight. Very exciting. But first of all, we're going to catch up with Ashley Grives, who's got a runner in the Truel Memorial. Good morning, Ash. How are you?
Good morning, Sharon.